I'm Afshin Ratansi, and welcome back to Going Underground, broadcasting all around the world from the UAE, now outside of OPEC in the wake of a Strait of Hormuz catastrophe triggered by US-Israeli aggression in this region. If you're wondering why there isn't more popular protest against Trump's wars, well, it was 56 years ago today that US National Guard troops opened fire on unarmed students at Kent State. Today, the massacre is better known for the Neil Young song Ohio about dissent against US wars on Vietnam, Laos, and Cambodia. The USA, South Korea, Australia, and New Zealand would kill, wound, displace, make refugees of, or chemically contaminate up to 20 million. Today, another US president elected on promises to end forever wars looks set for another military defeat. Millions have been killed, wounded, or displaced by the Trump-Netanyahu wars on Lebanon and Iran. Billions put into hardship by higher prices for food and medicine. 66% de facto disapprove of Trump and 90% of Congress, according to Reuters, Ipsos, and Gallup polls. And this comes ahead of Trump interventions in Somalia and Cuba. Joining me again from Salt Lake City, Utah, is David Pine, Deputy Executive Director of the U.S. Task Force on National and Homeland Security. He's a former consultant to the U.S. Missile Defense Agency and former foreign policy advisor to Vivek Ramaswamy's 2024 presidential campaign. David, thanks so much for coming back on again. You know, you're a Trump supporter from the beginning. You've supported Trump through the years. I mean, is it your understanding, and this has all happened since you've last been on Going Underground, that Trump started this war and there's this blockade because after the UK-US EU armed genocide in Gaza, that's what Netanyahu wanted?
Yeah, Shannon, it's great to be back on your show. Yes, I think that's exactly right. President Trump reportedly was briefed by Netanyahu in the Situation Room at the White House on February 11th and persuaded to fight this war on behalf of the Greater Israel Project. The only person in the cabinet that supported was Pete Hegseth, Secretary of War. He was very bullish about it. Everyone else thought it was a complete mistake.
I should just say, of course, Trump has denied this explicitly on Truth Social. I mean, some said he was not protesting too much. And what did you think about his deliberate and avowed denial?
Well, I think everything President Trump has said about this war in Iran has been a lie, essentially. I mean, I've never seen during the Cold War, Soviet propaganda was far more truthful than what he's been saying about the war in Iran. And so I think this war is a war of lies. I think that, President Trump has said the war was won in early March. He said that, Iran's military was 100% destroyed in terms of their military capability, I think on March 11th. So, he keeps saying things that simply aren't true. And I think that's true about the Iraq war debate internally in the White House, which reportedly was, it was very chaotic. And J.D. Vance, to his credit, stuck by his America First principles and strongly opposed the war behind the scenes. And he's paid a price for it in terms of being sidelined on war policy issues ever since.
Although I guess he could have resigned, but I want to get on to J.D. Vance in a second. Of course, the war might have already got even worse at the behest of the demands of Netanyahu. The question is, do you feel that his fear of a Carter-like situation when Iran shot down a U.S. warplane means that he's too terrified now to take Netanyahu's orders about any kind of ground invasion, albeit one might have started by the time this is being broadcast? Do you think that really holds in his brain, Trump's brain?
I think it does. Yeah, I think President Trump is terrified about, U.S. military troops coming back, by the hundreds or thousands in body bags from a U.S. ground invasion of Iran, which would be sure to fail. Certainly we could take control of some Iranian islands in the Persian Gulf, but those troops could quickly become hostages to Iranian artillery fire, missile drone fire. We wouldn't be able to sail ships in the Persian Gulf without those ships being sunk by Iranian anti-ship missiles, cruise missiles, anti-ship ballistic missiles, hypersonic missiles. That's really the reason I think that the U.S. has maintained its carrier, USS Abraham Lincoln, 1,000, for the most part, 1,000 kilometers from Iran, that could be avoided. But Yeah, I think the chances of President Trump pursuing a ground invasion of Iran are very slim at this point. I think bombing strikes could certainly resume. But I think he really wants to get out of this war, and he's searching for an exit, a face-saving exit. He's just not willing to accept Iran's peace terms at this point, and he's trying to push his own maximalist peace terms on Iran.
But what if Netanyahu says, no, you have to keep marching on?
Well, I think Trump, I think Trump is behaving as an Israeli vassal, almost an Israeli puppet president. But, he still retains some degree of, independence, I think, from Israel. Because he's really already, he's really done, he's fought this war for Israel already. So I think that, Israel has already achieved a lot of its war aims. We've killed 50 top Iranian leaders. We've degraded their military anywhere from 30% to 50% across, multiple categories, certainly far from the 100% that Trump has stated. But I think that he's going to do ultimately what he feels is best for him, and not necessarily for the United States, because he's proven that he will not put America first anymore. He's putting America last and Israel first. But he's going to see those poll numbers, that are 33% or 34% approval. He sees that the Republican Party's chances of retaining control of the House or the Senate are, dissipating with every day that this war continues, and he sees the economic pain that U.S. Citizens are suffering from, rising oil prices, where oil prices have increased, I think, to around $124.
Why do you think world leaders haven't been more vocal? I mean, we weren't flies on the wall for his long conversation with Vladimir Putin. We weren't there for the conversations that must have taken place between GCC country leaders. What do you think the war has done to the United States' reputation in this region? Do you think people are blaming Iran, or people are blaming the United States?
Well, I think a lot of people, especially in the Gulf countries, are probably blaming the United States, because this is a war that the U.S. and Israel started. Iran had not conducted any direct attacks against the United States really since it came, the Islamist regime came to power in 1979, except in direct response to U.S. attacks on Iran. So, clearly the U.S. and Israel are the aggressors in this war, and, all of the consequences that have taken place are exactly what Iran threatened to do before the war, in terms of shutting down the Strait of Hormuz, as well as attacking our Gulf allies. I do think that the truth is coming out. We live in an age where, an information age, where it's very difficult to conceal these kind of truths, and President Trump is rightly getting the blame.
Yeah, I mean, there's a casualty figure being bandied around of 400 U.S. service people who have been injured. What is your understanding of not only the casualties, but the extent of the damage to the U.S. bases in this region?
Well, we've heard that about 13 U.S. out of 19 U.S. Military bases in the region have been destroyed or rendered unusable. I think that's likely accurate. So the cost to rebuild those would run into the several billion, if not tens of billions of dollars. And that would take years to rebuild.
How could that have happened? I mean, a lot of people now saying they have a newfound respect for General Kane, chair of the Joint Chiefs of Staff. I mean, that's 13 bases destroyed and rendered unusable. Aren't you shocked?
I'm not shocked at all. I mean, those bases were located, pretty close to Iran. Iran is a tremendous, it's essentially a missile regional power, even superpower. They have a vast number of missiles, likely a greater number of missiles even than the United States has, in terms of ballistic missiles and cruise missiles and heavy combat drones. Certainly the U.S. has a lot of light to medium, shorter range drones. We have superiority over Iran in that area. But, they have some of the best large combat drones in the world. And they were able to, destroy some of our bases using combat drones because the U.S., drone defense capabilities are not what they should have been. And the U.S. prioritized air and missile defense for Israel rather than our Gulf allies. So we showed that the U.S. military guarantee over our Gulf allies was really, you know, very shoddy and unreliable.
I mean, maybe the media had other issues to contend with rather than what you were trying to drive home there. I mean, Trump plays down possible attempt on his life, interrupting all the talk of Iran, of course, recently, has been that incident at the White House Correspondents' Dinner. What did you make of it? Of course, there was conspiracies that Israel was involved, as there are continuing to this day about Israel being involved in the assassination of John F. Kennedy. But what was that incident? It's as if assassination attempts on your president can be every other month, it seems.
Well, what was most surprising to me was the security was not a high level security event as it should have been. The Department of Homeland Security should have designated as such. The director of the Secret Service should have done so as well. This was reportedly very low security. We had President Trump, the Vice President, the First Lady, and probably around 6 to 8, senior cabinet secretaries that were there. If all of those, U.S. leaders had been killed, the acting president of the United States would be a 92-year-old Senator Chuck Grassley from, it was the Senate President Pro Tem. So I think that the crazy thing is we don't see anyone fired. There's no one, the Department of Homeland Security Secretary should be fired. Susie Wiles, Chief of Staff, reportedly she has some kind of direct control over the Secret Service. She should be fired, the chief of the Secret Service.
Well, Trump would say, well, they saved his life, didn't they, because they stopped him.
Well, and that's the thing is it's seemingly possible. There's increasing circumstantial evidence that indicates that this could be a staged event. Essentially, yes, the shooter was a far-left domestic violent extremist, but there's a growing controversy whether he even fired a shot. We saw in the camera, running past the magnetometer and the Secret Service agents, but it's the acting attorney general, Todd Blanche, is saying that they can't find the bullets, to me indicating that he didn't fire any bullets. He may have fired one shotgun round, or he may not have fired anything at all. So, what Trump shooter would not fire shots? He could have opened fire on the Secret Service agents to take them out and get through the ballroom, but he apparently didn't. May not have taken any shots at all. So it doesn't really seem like a serious attempt on the president's life. We saw them laughing at the press conference as if, it was all a big joke. Nothing really happened. We heard Caroline Leavitt, the White House press secretary, say that shots would be fired in the room just minutes before
she
that.
She was joking.
It did seem like a joke, but, I've never heard those terms used in the sense of political barbs being used. I've heard that it's been used, occasionally. And then, Fox News correspondent said that she was told by Caroline Leavitt's husband that she needed to be safe. She really needed to take serious precautions for her own personal safety, and just all these things have led to conspiracies, which have caused 70% of Americans to believe that this, in fact, was a staged assassination attempt.
David Byrne, I'll stop you there. More from the Deputy Executive Director of the U.S. Task Force on National and Homeland Security after this break. Welcome back to Going Underground. I'm still here with David Byrne, former consultant to the U.S. Missile Defense Agency in 2024, presidential campaign former foreign policy advisor. David, we were talking about all the various conspiracy theories as regards the alleged assassination attempt on Donald Trump's life. I mean, aside from that, and, things always happen when there's a gun and a president around. The New York Times here says the price tag of this war is incalculable. Regardless of how media reporting can change very quickly in the midst of a war, we don't really know. Well, we know from Hegseth $1.5 trillion is needed more for the Pentagon. I mean, Do you blame Netanyahu again for the cost to the American taxpayer and the American people for this? I mean, do you think the U.S. People are going to want their money back from Israel for this?
Well, I think the smartest thing we could do, I think that this war, more than any other, has shown the extreme necessity of the United States cutting off all security assistance from Israel, to Israel. I think that, it's been said that we need to divorce ourselves from Israel. I think that's true. I think we need to end our alliance with Israel. I think if the U.S. were a bona fide neutral power in the region, with regards to the ongoing Israeli-Iran military disputes, I think we could accomplish a lot more. Iran, much like Russia, is essentially a manufactured enemy. I mean, certainly they did take our embassy staff hostage. That was 47 years ago. But that's essentially the pretext we're fighting the war over. They bombed our embassy. Took our hostages at our embassy in Tehran. They bombed the Marine barracks in 1983. These are things that happened many decades ago. They're not reasonable justifications for us to be fighting this war. But ultimately, I think that President Trump is principally to blame, not Benjamin Netanyahu, because he is, after all, the president of the United States, one of the top three nuclear superpowers in the world. And he should show a degree of independence from Netanyahu and put America first, but instead he chose to put Israel first and America's national security last by starting this regional war of aggression against Iran.
So how could new alliances emerge in the wake of this war if a president was actually going to untie itself to Israel first? What, there'd be a greater cooperation and geostrategic alliances with the GCC? Countries in the region rather than Israel?
Yeah, I think the U.S., it is in our national interest to have, closer ties with the GCC countries. I don't think that needs to be military bases. Certainly, before the Gulf War of 1990-91, with the U.S. invasion of Iraq in response to their invasion of Kuwait, we had a base in Diego Garcia, but we had no permanent military presence in the region. We would sail the Fifth Fleet into near the Persian Gulf, but had no U.S. Army bases or even a naval base in Bahrain. So I think that's really the ideal. For me, it's the U.S. National Security Strategy that was issued in December of 2025 and our National Defense Strategy of January 2026 called for the U.S. to essentially pull out of Europe and the Middle East to a large extent, not completely. But I think that's really the ideal, is that we focus on returning to being a hemispheric superpower rather than a global superpower. And I think if the U.S. pulled our forces out of the Eurasian supercontinent, we would see the tensions between the U.S. and Russia and China really recede, certainly with Iran. I mean, Iran isn't going to be threaten us if we don't have military bases in the region. The reason that we started this war reportedly is because we knew that Israel was going to attack Iran. That was, Israel was an imminent threat, not Iran. That President Trump felt that, Iran would make good on its threats to attack U.S. military bases. But instead of simply saying that the U.S. would stay neutral to ensure that our bases weren't attacked, he decided to ensure our bases would be attacked by going to war.
Yeah, but you're speaking like a Joe Biden supporter there, I'm afraid. You believed genocidal Blinken when he said all of that Biden had been told the same, and so great was Joe Biden that somehow he had assured Israel he wouldn't come to the aid of Israel for retaliation from Iran. Did that story strike you as true, that somehow Biden is tougher than Trump?
Well, I think Biden was tougher with Netanyahu, certainly. I mean, there was, I think, some kind of temporary suspension of U.S. bombs to
very limited.
Israel.
That was when the genocide happened.
Very limited, yes. Very extremely limited. So I think that Biden was weak too. But, reportedly Netanyahu gave the hard sell to Bush, Obama, and Biden, and every single one of them. And even Trump during his first term, refused to go to war with Iran as Netanyahu demanded. So really, Trump likes to say he was the only president to take action against Iran. I would say he was the weakest president because he was the only one to cave to Netanyahu and appease Netanyahu in this way by starting this illegal war of aggression, which is the first great power war we fought essentially since the Korean War.
So he's reneged on his campaign promises by going into a war in the Middle East. And I suppose you mentioned the manufactured enemy of Iran, the manufactured enemy of Russia. Veterans evaluate NATO. I don't think in the Sulzberger New York Times we'd ever see doubts about the importance of NATO emerge. But ironically, after the Trump-Putin call, it seems as if Ukraine has been taken off the table. And Trump isn't as strongly focused on the war in Europe and the need for a rapprochement with Russia. Is that another side effect of this terrible war?
I think it is. Since the war began, President Trump has referred to Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky as a clown. He's talked about the Ukraine is being militarily defeated. I don't know if he meant to say that. He may have been trying to speak about Iran when he stated that during his White House press briefing. But he said Ukraine is defeated. So, that is really, I think, off his radar. I think the U.S. is continuing to sell arms to NATO countries on behalf of Ukraine. So I think that's...
He does from time to time mention NATO, though, disparagingly, but no real aim to... he did, I suppose, in response to Mertz's comments that Iran has humiliated the United States, raised the idea of withdrawing tens of thousands of American occupying troops from Germany.
Yeah, I think that's a real possibility. Secretary Rubio and other neocons in and out of the Trump administration that are considered Trump insiders have raised that exact point. Some have even said that we could withdraw from NATO and kind of, forge some kind of alliance with Eastern European countries that are more compliant with Trump's directives and wishes. But ultimately, none of those countries came to U.S. aid in this war of aggression against Iran. And Trump's pretty miffed about that. And he has threatened to withdraw from NATO. Ultimately, I don't think that's going to happen. I think it's going to be exactly what you said. We're going to close some bases in France, Italy, Spain, and other countries that have denied us basing rights or overflight rights for our warplanes, traveling back and forth to the Iran theater of war.
Yeah, no bases in France. I'm sure any French viewers will be the first to say. But I suppose then one element here is that you mentioned Eastern European countries. Of course, it's getting late. J.D. Vance went over to Hungary. Hungary went down after lots of EU alleged interventions. Bulgaria, it's true, perhaps a more compliant. America's top diplomat kept clear of Iran crisis. That's the Financial Times talking about Secretary of State Rubio. Not sure he's really in the clear. You were mentioning J.D. Vance at the beginning of this program. Do you fear for his safety, given his clear that he appears to be the clearest opponent of the Trump-Netanyahu policy? Although he hasn't resigned or anything, nor is Tulsi Gabbard.
Well, unfortunately, I've heard that Tulsi Gabbard has been told that she has to resign by the November election. So, that just shows the defeat of America First, forces within the White House. Vice President J.D. Vance, of course, is constitutionally protected. He can't be fired. He's an independent office holder who was independently elected. But I do not fear for his safety. I think that he certainly has been sidelined in matters of war policy because he principally opposed both the ouster of Maduro, the U.S. war against Venezuela, as well as both the strikes on Iran. So he has remained true to his principles, although he has been placed in the uncomfortable position of defending Trump's war in Iran. But he is... notably, believed by Iranian leaders to be the only, credible voice of reason and, someone who's honorable and trustworthy within the Trump administration. And so he was asked to lead negotiations with Iran on April 11th. And he made some a lot of leeway. The U.S. and Iran actually came pretty close to negotiating a deal before Netanyahu essentially vetoed it over the issue of enrichment, and Trump ordered Vance to come home mid-negotiations.
Yeah, so, I mean, I suppose I'm going to ask you where you're hearing that about Tulsi Gabbard, who was a key opponent of Middle East, West Asian wars, and what you would, what advice you would give to the Director of National Intelligence at the moment. What, just hang on till November and have no impact whatsoever? And why are you forgiving J.D. Vance for not resigning?
Well, I don't think it's in his interest to resign. I think it's imperative that he remains within the administration as the only really surviving voice, besides Tulsi Gabbard America, the America First agenda that President Trump ran on. So I don't fault him for that. Certainly, I think he could be more vocal in his criticism against Trump's war in Iran. With regards to Tulsi Gabbard, I don't think those rumors have been officially confirmed. I've read them online from multiple sources. I'm hoping they're not true. I think Tulsi Gabbard is a key voice for reason within the administration. The problem is that since President Trump decided to go full neocon in June of last year with his Operation Midnight Hammer strikes on Iran, she really has been sidelined from all war policy discussions. We were told when she was confirmed by the Senate that she would be briefing the president personally every day with the presidential daily briefing, and there's no evidence at all that ever occurred. I think it's CIA Director John Ratcliffe has been doing that instead, and he is he's a very hardcore Israel First neocon. So that's very unfortunate.
David Pyne, thank you.
Thank you.
That's it for the show. Our continued condolences to all those bereaved by today's NATO nation wars of aggression. We'll be back on Saturday. Until then, keep in touch via all our social media if it's not censored in your country, and head to our channel, Going Underground TV on Rumble.com, to watch new and old episodes of Going Underground. See you Saturday.